We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
All right, H-Town Hoops Podcast, Brandon Scott, Adam Spillane, Austin Mendez in the background for us producing this thing, sportsradio610.com. And we're here, Adam, it's James Harden reunion time, or at least we think so. You know, it's funny, it didn't actually occur to me until later on Sunday as we were at NRG Stadium covering Deshaun Watson's return to the Texans, or to the NFL, actually, after having last played for the Texans in almost 2 years. Didn't actually occur to me that really literally the next day would be another return for James Harden, and just the timing of all of that. And it's probably because of, you know, Deshaun hadn't played in 2 years, and the way programming works at Sports Radio 610, there was a lot more focus on this, and it's just a bigger storyline. But here we are with James Harden coming back, and obviously this has happened before. It's not like a new thing, but I am curious to what you think about James Harden specifically in this matchup, because it's important for Philly. He's missed, what, about 14 games? Meanwhile, the 76ers have played really well defensively, and James Harden is obviously a big part of what they want to do offensively. So I'm just curious of what you think about him coming back and what you're actually expecting from him.
Well, it'll be the third time that he's come back. I mean, he came back, a couple of months after the trade, then he came back here last year. With Brooklyn. So it's his third trip and it's his second new team. So I guess there's not a whole lot of novelty with it. And also that whole Sixers team, that's a whole reunion just in and of itself, where there are more. Eric Gordon, I think, has played more games with the Sixers, with the guys on the Sixers, and he's actually played with his own teammates. I have to actually go look and see if that's actually true.
But it's five guys. It's like five guys, right? It's like five guys on the team.
It's Harden, it's Tucker, it's House. Montrezl Harrell is there. Obviously, you have Daryl Morey and Tad Brown in that front office. So yeah, it's the South Jersey Rockets. So it's good just to reminisce on those times, and you know, organizationally, those years were probably the best that they've had in decades. So it's good to see Harden does maintain just ties to the city. He still lives here a good portion of the time. And he has relationships with guys on this current team. And, I mean, you can go up and down the list with Kevin Porter Jr., somebody like Josh Christopher, who wore his number at Arizona State, Jalen Green. There are some relationships that he has. And also, he was around them during the summer. He was around a lot of these young guys during the summer. They were playing pickup at Toyota Center over the summer. And so they've had a chance to kind of, you know, see what he, you know, just what that's like up close, and kind of, you know, form a relationship with him. So I think that's the interesting part of it. And you'll see this tomorrow, whether he plays or not, but all those guys after the game, I guarantee you, will come up to him at one point. And there might even be a fight over who gets his jersey at the end of the game. I mean, that's how close the ties are. You know, Jabari Smith, like I said, Porter, like all these guys were part of the pickup games at Toyota Center over the summer. So that's something to keep an eye on. And they get up for games like that.
Well, I think one of the things to keep in mind here is it's not a lot different from when they play, you know, the Warriors, the type of team that they aspire to be. Like James Harden quietly now, or I guess not so quietly, I mean, everybody talks about how much does he have left in the tank. I mean, quietly now he's in his early to mid 30s. He's got to be 33 years old at this point. So, and you compare that to, I mean, what do we know about the Rockets? Everybody is under 20. All of the relevant players almost are under the age of 23 years old. So, like, they look up to James Harden. James Harden is like a, I mean, obviously he's one of the greatest offensive players that we've seen. And, you know, for them, like, they would obviously look up to a player like that who's proven as much and has done as much in the league as he has. I don't know. For me, it's interesting reflecting. I was going to ask you how you reflect on his legacy here, since this is a relatively new podcast and we haven't actually discussed it here on this particular platform. But I don't know. It's funny looking back on it. Like, I don't know. For me, in some ways, you could blame James Harden for where the Rockets found themselves. But at the same time, like, he's unquestionably a top two or three Rocket of all time. And, you know, provided some of the greatest moments in franchise history. I'm just curious how you reflect on his legacy here.
No, he's number two. And I don't think there's anyone. It's Hakeem Olajuwon one and then James Harden two. And I don't think anyone really comes close after that. And he's a huge part of just kind of the renaissance that they had just organizationally. I mean, you look the 3 years before the trade, they weren't a playoff team. They were right in the middle of that, you know, 40, 41, 42 win seasons, not going to the playoffs, not being relevant at all nationally or even locally, to be honest with you. I mean, no one's talking about the Rockets back then. And so he kind of put them back on the map. He played a fun style of basketball where they were getting up and down the floor, and he got them back to relevancy very quickly. I mean, he gets traded, you know, 5 days before the season or whatever it was in 2012, and they make the playoffs that year. And I don't think anyone expected for that to be a playoff team even after the trade. And you go from 2013 making the playoffs to then 2014, they're finishing in the top half of the Western Conference and having home court advantage. I mean, they went to the playoffs 8 straight years with James Harden. They got out of the first round 5 times. They had a home court advantage in the first round. So they finished in the top half of the Western Conference, the toughest conference in basketball. They were in the top half of it 6 times in 8 years. They got to the conference finals a couple of times. They narrowly missed out on a couple of other conference final appearances. So it was a very good era of basketball. They didn't get to exactly where they wanted to. They didn't accomplish everything, but they went up against one of the best teams of all time. So I don't think that you can consider the era any sort of a disappointment. You can't consider it anything but a success when you consider how it was formed. It really came out of nowhere. And you had the Harden years with Dwight Howard, and then you had the Harden years post-Dwight Howard, and they were both pretty successful at the end of the day. So I think it's an era, it's an 8-year stretch that will be remembered upon fondly. Now, the other part of it is just the way that it ended was ugly. And, you know, how do you balance the two? I think certainly the first 8 years outweighed the last, but it was still an ugly exit without a question.
Yeah, I think the ugly exit is what stained it for me, and probably the thing that lingered for a little while. But I guess the point that I was making earlier is that I guess time and the huge difference between, you know, the obvious difference between the whole Deshaun Watson thing, aside from the off field, you know, off the field and off the court type of stuff, there's nothing like that with James Harden, obviously. But the huge difference between the two is that, you know, the James Harden thing, you've had a couple of years, as you mentioned, this is going to be his third. He's already come back twice now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be his third time coming back. So time has been able to provide a little perspective and be able to kind of look at it like that, kind of the way you put it, that the 8 years of success sort of outweigh the way it ended. And not just that, Adam, honestly, I would look at it like this, like as ugly as the ending was, it did need to end. It was, and I don't think I looked at it this way maybe at the time, but I do think it was time for it to end one way or another. It would just been more ideal if it had not ended perhaps the way it did.
It was just ugly and public, I guess, would be that, you know, if there's not the press conference after that Lakers game, and this whole situation is crazy, and just kind of the day and a half that lingered after that, I think it's a little different. But he gave them 8 years. And I think that's the big difference between him and Deshaun Watson, is that Watson jumped out. He jumped ship as soon as he could, and Harden stuck around. You know, they had that bad year in 2016 where they go 41-41. They fire McHale. after 11 games that season, and they could never really get it figured out. And the whole thing with Dwight Howard is completely falling apart, and he stuck with it. And he could have asked out. There were ways that he could have gone to the Lakers. He could have waited and gone to free agency, you know, but he signed the extension very quickly. And so he gave them that was the second iteration of the team. I think with a lot of guys, you don't see the second iteration of that team. You just see the player jump ship as soon as he has the opportunity. Harden stuck it out, and you saw what Daryl Morey was able to build around him, and it contributed, and also Mike D'Antoni, and it contributed to the four best years of Harden's career.
All right, what do you make of this team, or Harden with this team, with the Sixers, man? They've gone 8-6 without him. It looks like they've had the league's best defensive rating in this stretch, according to Cleaning the Glass. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where the Sixers exactly fit in the overall NBA ecosystem. We talk about the Rockets. We already know what's going on there. But what do you make of the Sixers, obviously, with James Harden?
I can't say that I've kept up with them real closely. They've just been so banged up. Harden's missed some time, and Embiid's missed some time. Now Tyrese Maxey has been out also. So it's just a really hard team to get an age of just because of how injured that they've been. But I feel like if they're healthy, they're very, very good and very formidable, and they've got some depth. But until then, I mean, it's going to be hard for them to win games with just Joel Embiid. It's really hard to win basketball games that way. You saw it in the postseason last year. They weren't healthy then, but you know, there were stretches, especially in that Toronto series, where they looked really good. I thought Toronto would give them some problems and maybe even win that series. And they go out and they win the first three games of that series, and they gave a couple back afterwards, but then they just completely dominated them in game six. I think they won game six by 35 points on the road in Toronto. And Harden was awesome in that game. That was probably one of his best playoff games in a long time. So I do think there's a high ceiling for that team, but you just have to see all of them on the floor together, and we really just haven't gotten to see a lot of. I think the fact that they're, you know, over 500 at this point, it speaks to just how good those guys actually can be.
Yeah, here in the 14 games that Harden's been out, they've also been without Tyrese Maxey for 8 games, Joel Embiid for 5, Matisse Thybulle for 3 games, and Tobias Harris missed 2. And Maxey's still out, it looks like, with the foot fracture in his foot. So, like you said, this is an incomplete team. It's hard to really get a gauge on them. And James Harden coming back is certainly going to be something that'll help them a lot. All right, let's talk about the weekend that was with the Rockets. Okay, now I'm gonna be honest with you. I'd like to just forget that the Warriors game happened. But let's just start with this. What did you learn, or what should we have learned or take away from them splitting with the Suns and the Warriors, obviously beating the Suns and losing to the Warriors?
I think we said this last week, they've got fight, and they will fall behind. They will dig themselves into a deep hole, but they know how to dig themselves out of a hole. It would probably be prudent if they stopped doing the things that they've been doing. But they at least have the talent to get out of a jam if they're in one. And I do think that you also saw, and this, more so last night than anything else, just how Bruno Fernando can help them and what he adds to the team, especially last night, just the energy and the size and the springiness that he has. I think it's something that they've been missing, and I think it's something that they helped that really helped them in last night's game. And I've said this many times, and I'll probably say it many times more, but I do wonder how much longer until Steven Silas makes a shift to the starting lineup and puts him in there with that starting unit.
All right, well, let's go there then, because I had that down on the rundown. Bruno Fernando shows up as the pick and roll threat, the lob threat, and this is something that you've written about, I want to say about at least a week ago, I guess whenever it was that Bruno came back from injury, about how he could unlock that unlock that element of the Rockets offense that you don't really see a lot of when he's not out there. So let's expand on that, man. Bruno Fernando, you think he's going to be inserted at the 5 in place of Şengün? Şengün, we've talked about him, or at least you've mentioned liking him best with that second unit. Whenever you talk about maybe running an offense through him, maybe that's the second unit where that's the best place to do that. Is that what you see happening at some point? Do you think that's best for them?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I'm still waiting to see if they adjust, because you saw that at the start of the year. And I don't know if maybe that was just an experiment for those first two games, and then Fernando gets hurt, and if maybe they were just intending on bringing, on putting Shingun back into the starting lineup at some point. I don't know. I really don't. But I do think that you see how much value that Fernando has. And, you know, one of the things that I wrote was that the Rockets were running pick and roll. Only four teams in the league were running more pick and roll than the Rockets. But the Rockets were the fourth worst team when it came to running pick and roll. And a lot of that was just they didn't have a very good role man. You know, their four most frequent used role guys, Shingun and Jabari Smith Jr. and KJ Martin and Usman Garuba have been well below average just at being able to get you points when they're used as a role man. And the Rockets still run a lot of pick and roll, and it still hasn't been very good, but there are signs that it's getting better. They went from fourth worst to fifth worst. So, I mean, that's some progress, and that's as much incremental progress as you can make over a very small stretch of games where you haven't had that many possessions. But I do think that you can see it, especially, and he's got some chemistry with Kevin Porter Jr. So I do think that just having that lob threat helps. It brings attention to him, so it provides some space in other parts of the floor for other guys. So I do think that you saw Fernando start to play a little bit more last night. I do think that you'll continue to see those minutes go up. I don't know if you'll see it necessarily in the starting lineup, but I kind of feel like it might not be the worst idea, but we'll have to see. Because they seem to, at least right now, be relatively committed to Shingun being the starting center.
The chemistry with Kevin Porter Jr. that you mentioned, though, is the thing that really stands out to me. Like that chemistry is actually really, really good. And you saw that, I think, in the fourth quarter of the Suns game. It was after Jalen Green kind of takes over in that third quarter. He's got the 20 points in the third quarter. A lot of it getting to the line. And that's something to maybe even discuss as well. I thought that was a really important game for Jalen Green. But how lucky was that ending, though, to that Suns game? I mean, if you look back on how that ended, I want to say at least two offensive rebounds for the Suns, maybe three. And maybe the third possession that I'm thinking about is when Kevin Porter Jr. is saving it, but it goes back to a Suns player and they get it to Devin Booker at the end there, and he misses the shot. I mean, as much credit as I want to give them, and you mentioned it earlier about the fight that they put in, and I don't want to discredit that, but how lucky was that ending to the Suns game for them to have like three shots at it?
It was lucky, but also the officials missed a foul. There was a loose ball foul on DeAndre Ayton against Bruno Fernando that wasn't called, and that was in the last 2 minute report. So
yeah, true.
So you had the first campaign miss, and then Ayton fouls Fernando on the rebound. So that should have been it right there. But instead, the Suns wind up getting three more shots. So you have Booker misses a 20-foot step back. Mikal Bridges gets the rebound off of that. Bridges misses a putback layup. That's when Porter gets the rebound and he tries to save it, but he saves it to Damian Lee, who gets it to Booker, who missed the 16-footer at the buzzer. So you have those three shots, but those three shots should have never happened because the officials missed a loose ball foul.
Yeah.
So certainly it was lucky that they won the game because you look at who's shooting the ball. I mean, that's Devin Booker getting two of those shots, and the other one is from Mikal Bridges on a putback. I mean, you figure that the odds of them missing all three of those shots are very low, but in a sense, they also got unlucky that it even came to that.
Also, though, I'm talking about luck here, but that first Devin Booker shot, that was good individual defense by Jalen Green and a very good contest by him. I thought his individual defense on Booker at the end of that game contributed to him not making that shot. Now, that clean look that he got at the end made me really nervous because I'm thinking, okay, well, that's it. Because that would have counted had he made that, even despite them missing that. I mean, 2 minute report, you know what? I mean, they would have won that game if he had made that shot. So, but you're right, obviously. It should have not have come to any of that. But also credit to Jalen Green, who, again, had that 20-point third quarter, went to the line at least 14 times, Adam, didn't he? I mean, almost hit a career high on free throw attempts. I want to say it was 15 going into that game.
16.
Yeah. 16, but
only made 12. That number, you know, you got to get to 13. Yeah. You don't want to be 75% if you're going to the free throw line that often. It would be, you know, that. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that was one of the things that made James Harden so good is that he got to the line a million times, but he also never missed from there. So you got to be a little bit better than 75% if you're going to go to the line 16 times.
Yeah, and I think it'll get better there too. He even missed a – was it the Suns game or the Warriors game where he missed a technical? He went there to shoot a technical and missed it. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, you got to get these easy ones, Jalen. I mean, and it's not like, you know, the better he gets, the more important I think it is going to be for him to hit those foul shots because, I mean, his shots are just going to get harder, you know, the way he's guarded night in and night out.
Yeah, he's 79% from the free throw line this year. Again, that's still very good. But I think with anyone, you just want that shot to be a little bit more consistent, a little bit better. I mean, James Harden for his career is an 86% free throw shooter. So, you know, those are points that you're leaving out on the table. And when you are getting to the line as often as Jalen Green can, I think it's important that he's able to do that. Now, you brought up Green and you brought up, you know, the third quarter and just how important that it was. I thought what was most impressive to me about, you know, a 20-point third quarter in the NBA, that's pretty remarkable. And it's really, really tough to do. But all the shots that he made, here are the shots that he made. All right. I'm going to run them down to you. Layup, dunk, layup, step back three, 8-foot floater, layup. He got to the line 8 times and then he makes 6 shots. Only one of them was a three. The other 5 shots came in the paint. So the fact that he's attacking the rim, getting to the rim, and finishing at the rim, I thought that's what was most impressive because oftentimes, especially with him, and this is young players in general, when you score in bunches like he did in that quarter, so much of it is from the three-point line. And sometimes you fall in love with that shot. But he only took 3 threes in that quarter. He made one of them, but he got to the rim, he got into the paint, and that's where he did all of his damage in that quarter.
Yeah, I think about a couple of plays stand out to me from that game. It's the drive against Booker where he gives him a little body at the end and he talks a little noise after he scores there. But I thought that was a big boy drive to the basket there. That one's in the third quarter, I think. And then maybe it's in the fourth quarter where he's going against campaign and he's going for a floater and he gets fouled. I think that was later in the game. I don't think that was the third quarter. That might have been in the fourth quarter. But those are two, like, really, I thought, like, just more so than just the – more so than, like, how we focused on him missing those free throws, I really thought it was impressive that he was attacking the rim, kind of like you mentioned. I thought it was impressive that he was attacking the basket. Those two plays that I mentioned to me were more indicative – of how just kind of how aggressive he was and sort of what his mentality was in that game. I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, he's got that. And he's, you know, I do think one of the negatives with him last year, like I think especially early in his career, his best scoring games where he had the one game, I think it was against Boston really early last year where he made 8 threes and everyone's, you know, wow, he made 8 threes and scored 30. He's the youngest guy since Kobe to score 30. Well, so much of it was from the three-point line. I want you to be more well-rounded. So I want you going to the rim. I want you getting to the free throw line. So when he's able to do that, when he's able to get to the line 60, and that's against a really good team too. That's not against, you know, Orlando or Oklahoma City or a team that's going to be in the lottery. That's a team that has a chance to win a championship. So when you can score 20 and a quarter against that type of a team and it's not like a fluky thing where you're just making a bunch of threes, that's impressive. And that's how you become a scoring champion. And that's how you wind up, you know, getting to all-star games. It's off of quarters like that.
Any takeaways from the Warriors game? I mean, this is probably, I guess for me early on, it was just so obvious and clear how much better the Warriors are. And it's not like, you know, newsflash, the Warriors are better than the Rockets. But so early in that game, it was like maybe sort of similar to the previous game that they played. It's like, man, they just do everything so much better. They're so much more in sync and I don't know. They just do everything well. And I don't know. That was kind of the big thing to me is just how far apart the two teams are. What were your takeaways from that game?
Playing 6 games in 9 nights is really, really tough. I don't care how young you are. And that's what the Rockets were in. last night. That was really, it's not a schedule loss because they would have lost the game in all likelihood had they been, you know, playing for the first time in three nights. But to play six games in nine nights with that group, they were shorthanded because Gordon's not playing second nights of back-to-backs. That's just that's a tough ask for a team to be able to do. And you could see early on, they were just tired. And it's not, you know, the defense on the trip was bad, especially early in games. And they're giving up 40 points in the first quarter, basically in all four of those games. In the last three, they're down an average of 15 points in the first quarter. But you could see it last night where just the offense, the bad offense was what led to the Warriors having a big first quarter, because they couldn't get into anything. They weren't getting good shots. They weren't working hard enough for good shots. And because they're being forced into tough shots, the Warriors are getting rebounds, they're getting runouts, and it just made for a very difficult situation. And I think I don't think it's a coincidence that the best units that played on that played for them against Golden State were the bench units, because those guys were fresh. They hadn't really had to pile up all the minutes that the starters had. So that's really all that I take from it. I will say, you did see some important stuff from the bench guys, and we'll get to one of them in particular in a minute, but yeah, I do think that you can take some positives out of that. But it would be nice if they could, you know, not give up 40 points in a first quarter. It makes it a whole lot easier to win games and be competitive in these games. But that's just, you know, that's one step. I do think it's really hard to play Alper and Şengün against Golden State. They just move the ball. Everything's just so quick with them. And they take advantage of him at every step. And I do think that you saw how Fernando's just the way that he's just a better mover, and he can protect the rim a little bit. And I think that they really miss that when he's not on the floor.
Yeah, well, you mentioned bench guys. I like Tari Eason in both games. He had 13 and 10 against Golden State. But this was also over the weekend, Josh Christopher had his best game. What do you make of Josh Christopher? Yeah, I mean, is he playing his way into getting some more minutes? Obviously, we've talked about this in the past, how he's kind of just been the odd man out. What do you make of what he was able to do?
You know, the box score, it's not going to jump out at you. 11 minutes, 6 points, 2 of 4 shooting, didn't have a rebound, had one assist. But there was one specific play where I think it's the third quarter. The Warriors are in zone, and he's set up behind the 3-point line on the left wing. And I think it was Jonathan Kuminga gets caught out of position and closes out way too hard or way too long on Garrison Matthews. And Matthews gets the ball to Christopher on the wing, and the Warriors defense is scrambled. And so the next guy who's in the corner runs towards Christopher, and Christopher gets the ball to the corner to Tari Eason. And then Eason has time to just drive baseline and get himself a bucket. And it's not a big play. It's not anything that's really going to stand out, but it showed some growth with Christopher, where he saw it, he recognized it, and then he made a quick decision to get the ball to Eason and give themselves a chance. And, you know, one of the things that Christopher has struggled with is decision-making, and seeing that those are little plays that get you on the floor. Those are little plays that are going to give you some more minutes. And then he followed that up and played really well after that. So I don't think it necessarily means he's going to be boom right in the rotation on Monday night against Philadelphia, but it does show that there's some it did kind of remind you, don't give up on him just yet. And I think, and I know for me, didn't play at all against Phoenix. He did not play at all in the first half of the game against the Warriors. And I'm thinking this guy might not even make it to the trade deadline. He might be one of these guys where they need a roster spot and they just move him to get off the contract for next year. But he did show that there's something there. They still really like him. He's just got to take advantage of the opportunities. And you've seen it many, many times where Garrison Matthews is the guy who will take advantage of the opportunity. You saw last night it was Christopher who took advantage of his.
Yeah, and you love to see it, because I know he's a really hard-working kid, and everybody likes Josh Christopher a lot. And so he's easy to root for and somebody that you want to succeed. I don't know, for me, it's just really hard envisioning a spot for him when you think about Deshaun Nix being sort of a better point guard, and they have better options as scoring options. And then Ty Washington is, you know, doing his thing with the Vipers. And it's somebody that I think is going to have at least a shot or an opportunity to make an impression at some point. So I just wonder, you know, I love to see the game from him and love to see kind of him have these moments whenever he does get these opportunities. But it still, for me, raises that question, or that question, I should say, is still there of where does he fit in the grand scheme of things when you consider what else they've got there in the spots where he'd play.
No, he's clearly behind the other guys, but the talent's there. I think we all know the talent's there. You just need to see him improve. And what he did last night, just again, it's a very small play in a game, but I don't think that he makes that pass. And it seems like a simple pass, but the game is moving so quickly. You know, the Warriors are in zone, but for the game to have slowed down enough for him to be able to see that play to Eason, I do think it shows some growth, and it does show that he's getting better. You might not necessarily see it on the floor because he's not getting minutes, but it is there. And so I do think that it's a step. And naturally, what development is. Development is just taking step after step after step after step until you become a really good player. You know, we'll see what happens moving forward. But the fact that he saw that, I think shows that there's still something there, and there's still an opportunity for him to really make something of himself on this team, because there will be minutes that open up. Guys will get hurt. Guys might get traded. So minutes will be there. It's just a matter of, again, do you take advantage of the minutes when you get them? And so far this season, he had not done that. Last night he did.
Yeah, I think two really good examples on the team, if you want to talk about guys who took advantage of their opportunities or have taken advantage of their minutes and now have solidified roles on this team, you would look at KJ Martin and Jayshon Tate even before him, like guys who, you know, could have very easily, you know, KJ as a second round pick, and we all know Jayshon's his route to the NBA, guys who could have easily found themselves out of the rotation, found a role and found an identity and a niche for themselves. Obviously different types of players, but just talking about guys who stuck around long enough to make an impression and got their opportunities and made the most of them. Those are two teammates of his that would be, I think, really good examples to look at.
Honestly, I think a better example is Eason from this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Total. 100%. I'm looking at guys that are ahead of him, but Eason is a great example.
I think, like, with Tate, it suffered because there's nobody else. So they didn't have any players, you know, 2 years ago. So he was going to play, and he was healthy, and he played basically that entire season. And then I do think Martin's a good example, especially from last year, where the minutes weren't there for him early in the season. He was playing behind some guys, and then, you know, he was good. So he kind of created a role for himself, but I don't know if anyone thought that. Really, you could say Christopher last year. Steven Silas even said he didn't expect Josh Christopher to be in his rotation last year, but Christopher was so good that he couldn't keep him off the floor. And I do think that if you're Josh Christopher and you hear that, you still have an opportunity to get yourself back in the rotation. It's just all about what you do when you're on the floor and if you continue to show growth. So there are a million examples, and really Josh Christopher just has to look at himself as one of those examples. But, you know, Eason was a guy, I don't know if he necessarily would have thought that he was going to be in the rotation, no matter what he did in summer league over the summer, but he played well during preseason. He continued to play well during the regular season. And so it's gotten to the point where he's going to be on the floor. You could say the same thing for Usman Garuba this year, where Garuba was a little bit of an afterthought, but he got an opportunity when Fernando got hurt, and now it almost feels like there are times where he's ahead of Fernando in the rotation.
All right, the Rockets are at home for what is it, 8 of the next 9 games? I don't think they leave Texas, the state of Texas, until after Christmas, possibly, the way it's looking, because they've got San Antonio on Thursday. They got a lot of these games at home. And it'll be cool. It'll be pretty cool to have them back home. They've been on the road a lot this year. Be cool to have them home at the Toyota Center, be able to take in some Rockets games. So this week we've got, obviously, Monday, the James Harden return, hosting the Sixers. And then, of course, you're going out to San Antonio to face the Spurs before you come back next Sunday against Milwaukee. and host Milwaukee and the Phoenix Suns in back-to-back games, or Sunday and the following Tuesday. So we'll be back. That's the H-Town Hoops podcast. Brandon Scott, Adam Spillane. Big thanks to Austin Mendez in the background. Make sure you guys are subscribing, rating, reviewing. And if you're listening right now, you've probably already done those things. But at the very least, tell somebody else about the podcast and help us grow the audience and bring people in. And until next time, we'll see you guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.